It didn't start with lies. It started with compliments, with silence that felt like punishment, with a smile that rewrote my memory. They said I was too sensitive, too forgetful, too much. But here's the truth. I wasn't broken. I was being broken. This is the story of how I saw the tricks, named them, and walked away. One manipulation at a time. And once you hear them, you'll never fall for them again. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The smile that lied. I should have known from the beginning. Not because of what he said, but how he said it. There's a kind of silence that wraps around words like gauze around a blade. You don't see the wound until you bleed. And I bled slow. The first time he said, "I'm just worried about you," we were sitting at my kitchen table. Sunlight filtered through the blinds in these golden stripes, and the tea was still steaming. But something about the way he tilted his head, the way his eyes scanned me not with care but calculation, it was the beginning of the unraveling. It started so soft. "Don't you think you've been sleeping too much lately? You didn't laugh at that joke. Are you okay? Maybe you're just not remembering things the way they actually happened." Each question, like a thread pulled loose from my sense of self. And I answered him. Every time. I gave him answers I didn't owe. I handed over parts of my certainty like receipts he never earned. Because I wanted to be understood. And manipulators? They weaponize your desire to be seen. He never raised his voice. Never cursed. He didn't need to. He made doubt feel like intimacy. He made concern feel like a hug. And in that fog, I stopped trusting myself. I'd sit with my journal open, rereading my own notes just to remind myself of what was true. And yet still, I'd wonder, am I overreacting? Because that's how gaslighting works. Not as a bomb, but as a whisper. The breaking point came in a grocery store. I reached for almond milk. He stopped my hand. "You don't drink that," he said. "Yes, I do," I thought. But I said nothing, because by then I was already doubting my memory, already rehearsing explanations in my head for a truth I knew 5 years ago. It's a quiet kind of erasure, being rewritten while you're still alive. That night, I opened my laptop and searched for the word. Gaslighting. And there it was. Line by line. Word for word. Everything I had lived, written by someone else. It felt like being seen by a ghost. I printed the page. I underlined everything that matched my life. And for the first time in months, I whispered back to the darkness. "No, that's not what happened. Love bombing before the control. The first time he touched my hand, I swear I felt safe. Not the kind of safety you reason through. The kind your body accepts without asking. Warm. Present. Like I'd been waiting to exhale and finally could. He texted every morning before I woke. He sent flowers to my job. He remembered my coffee order after one date. And when I said I didn't like attention, he made his affection quieter, but never smaller. It was overwhelming. It was intoxicating. It was everything I'd been taught to believe love looked like. He said I was different. Said I made him feel seen. Said I healed parts of him no one else had ever reached. I didn't notice then how early the word forever entered the conversation. Or how he said ours before I'd even said mine. I thought it was fate, but it was strategy. You see, love bombing doesn't come with a warning label. It doesn't kick down the door. It seduces the room. It's affection as surveillance. It's intimacy used as reconnaissance. Every question he asked me, "What's your biggest fear? When did someone last betray you?" felt like caring. I didn't realize he was loading bullets with every answer. It happened one night, the shift. We were at my place. I was tired, didn't want to talk, wanted to just be. He tilted his head, smiled just slightly. "I'm used to you lighting up when I walk in. Did I do something wrong?" It wasn't an accusation. It was a test. And I failed. I apologized. I kissed his hand. And I thanked him for checking in. But that night, the roses started to feel like red flags. In the weeks after, affection became conditional. If I answered fast, he was warm. If I delayed, he was cold. If I shared something vulnerable, he opened up. If I held back, he withdrew. And every time I started to question it, he'd drop something perfect. A playlist of songs that said the things I couldn't voice. A book I'd once mentioned in passing. A voice note at midnight. "You're the calm I've never known." I was being studied, measured, and reshaped, until I couldn't tell the difference between being desired and being handled. The final wake-up call came through a friend. She noticed the changes. How I stopped showing up to dinners. How I smiled less. How I started asking permission for things I used to claim freely. "Are you happy?" she asked me one night on the phone. I paused, and in that pause, I realized I didn't know, because when you're being love-bombed, it feels like worship, until you try to breathe without their blessing, and suddenly you're punished. I wasn't loved. I was being collected. The silent treatment, as a weapon. Silence used to be my sanctuary. I cherished it. Morning silence. Rain silence. Bookstore silence. But his silence wasn't stillness. It was punishment, and it didn't start with shouting. It started with absence. Intentional, weaponized, deafening absence. I remember the first time he did it. We had a disagreement, not even an argument. I'd asked if we could slow things down. Just a little. Just enough so I could breathe. He nodded. Smiled. Said, "Of course." But the next day he was gone. Texts left on read. Phone calls unanswered. Like I'd been erased with the stroke of a single sentence. I told myself he was busy. I convinced myself it was nothing. But after 3 days of silence, I wasn't just confused, I was desperate. I replayed everything I'd said, line by line, tone by tone, looking for the exact moment I'd made him disappear. That's what the silent treatment does. It turns your need for connection into a form of captivity. On the fifth day, he reappeared. Texted, "Hey, sorry, been in my head." I responded immediately. Apologized. For what, I still don't know. He told me he needed space sometimes. That it wasn't about me. That I shouldn't take it personally. But then why did I feel like I was drowning? Because it wasn't just silence. It was selective silence. He'd post stories. Respond to mutual friends. Laugh with strangers. But me? I was muted. Ghosted. Made invisible in the most visible way. And each time he returned, I was smaller. More compliant. More afraid to say the wrong thing. Because silence wasn't just the absence of noise. It was a cage. Eventually I stopped asking questions. I stopped voicing discomfort. I trained myself to anticipate his moods, to read his stillness like a language. And when he went quiet again, I filled the void myself. Sent long texts. Checked in constantly. Overcompensated, like love was a debt I owed. I didn't know it then, but I was being conditioned. I learned that if I behaved, he'd speak. If I stayed agreeable, he'd stay. But if I questioned him, if I needed him, if I reminded him I was human, he'd vanish. You see, emotional abusers don't need fists. They don't need raised voices. Sometimes all it takes is silence. The kind that makes you question your worth in the dark. And I did. Over and over again. Until I realized. I had memorized his silence more than my own voice. You said you were okay with this. It's strange how betrayal doesn't always scream. Sometimes it's soft. So soft that it sounds like your own voice. That's what he did. He made his choices sound like ours. It began with little things. He'd buy something expensive without asking. Then say, "You said you were cool with it, remember?" I didn't. But the way he said it, with certainty, with that casual grin, like I was being forgetful, I'd start to wonder. Maybe I did say that. Maybe I nodded. Maybe. I forgot. But I hadn't. What I'd said was, "Let me think about it." What he heard or pretended to was permission. That was his trick. He twisted hesitation into consent, silence into agreement, doubt into approval. And every time I tried to correct it, he made it feel like I was going back on my word. "Don't gaslight me," he'd say. The irony cut like glass. I remember the worst time. We were at a dinner party, his co-workers, not mine. He made an offhand joke about me quitting my job soon to focus on the house. Everyone laughed. I smiled, tight-lipped. We hadn't discussed that. At all. Later that night, when I brought it up, he sighed. "We've talked about this, babe. You said you were open to it." "No," I'd said. "It's something I'd consider in the future, maybe." He twisted maybe into definitely, and turned my consideration into commitment. The problem with false agreements is that they stack. And eventually you start doubting your own reality. You wonder, did I agree to this? Was this my idea? Am I being difficult, or just forgetful? And he loved that confusion. Because when your memory feels unreliable, his narrative becomes the truth. So I stopped arguing. I let him speak for us. I let him finish my sentences. I let him shape our plans, because he convinced me they were mine too. But inside, I was vanishing, one unspoken disagreement at a time, until one day, I found an old email I'd written to myself. It was from 6 months prior, a list of goals, plans I'd made before he'd begun deciding for me, and not one of them had come true, not because I changed my mind, but because I was talked out of them, gently, persuasively, persistently. I never said yes, but I never said no loud enough. From that day on, I wrote everything down. Every conversation. Every feeling. Because I needed proof for myself that I wasn't losing my mind. Just losing a battle I didn't know I'd agreed to fight. You're the problem. It always ended with me apologizing. Even when he lied. Even when he vanished. Even when he raised his voice in public and left me there, shaking. Somehow, I always ended up saying sorry. It didn't happen all at once. At first, it was just small redirections. When I brought up something that hurt, he'd say, "You always focus on the negative." Or, "You're being too sensitive again." Or the worst one, "If I hurt you, I didn't mean to." But it's exhausting to always be the villain in your head. That one broke me. Because it sounded fair. It sounded logical. But what it really did was make my pain feel like a problem I created. That's how the guilt flip works. You walk into the conversation with bruises. You leave it wondering why you're the one who threw the punch. I remember one night in particular. He'd forgotten my birthday dinner. Just didn't show. No call. No message. Nothing. He texted the next morning. "Rough night. I needed space. Can't believe you're making this about you." And somehow I believed him. I folded. I replied. "I'm sorry. I should have checked in with how you were feeling." I meant it too. Because he'd trained me to put his storms above my scars. Eventually, he didn't even need to deflect. I did it for him. I started watching my tone, softening my questions, anticipating what might set him off, and adjusting so he wouldn't have to. I lived in preemptive apology, a life curated to keep him calm and myself invisible. And when I did speak up, when something boiled over, he'd sit there, arms crossed, eyes bored. "You really think you're perfect, don't you?" Wow, victim mode again. Those words, they stick. They echo. They nest inside your ribcage and repeat in your own voice when you're alone. Eventually, I couldn't tell the difference between guilt and love, between being self-aware and being manipulated. Because guilt, in the hands of a skilled manipulator, is a leash. You don't even realize it's around your neck. You just get used to how little you're allowed to move. Until one day, I said something I hadn't said in months. I said, "No, it wasn't loud. It wasn't dramatic. But it was mine." And in that moment, the silence that followed wasn't frightening. It was freedom. Because when guilt loses its grip, so does he. The reformed manipulator act. He came back like he'd found God. Soft voice. Clean beard. New therapist. New job. Even his texts had changed, shorter, kinder, filled with "How are you really?" And against my better judgment, I answered. Because part of me still wanted to believe he had changed. That maybe, just maybe, the person I needed back then was who he'd finally become. He said he'd done a lot of self-reflection. He used all the right words. Accountability. Emotional maturity. "I know I hurt you, but it was too smooth. Too rehearsed." Like he wasn't apologizing. He was auditioning. And when he spoke, he never asked what I needed. He only told me what he'd learned. Like redemption was something you could wrap in bullet points. "I've changed. I'm different now. I just want to be the man you deserve." But here's the thing. If someone truly changes, they don't need an audience to believe it. I tested him, just once. Mentioned how his silence used to hurt me. He paused, smiled gently, then said, "You were just too sensitive back then. I think you'd handle it differently now." And just like that, there he was. The same man, different packaging. Because the reformed manipulator doesn't come to heal. They come to reclaim. They miss the control, not the connection. They miss the power, not the partnership. And their apology? It's a sales pitch, not a surrender. He told me I was glowing. Said I seemed stronger, more grounded. Then added, "And maybe now that we've both grown, we can start fresh." I didn't flinch. I didn't cry. I didn't even smile. I just said, "No. I grew, because you left." That silence? The one that used to terrify me? This time I let it stretch. I watched him try to fill it. Watched him stammer. Watched him realize that I didn't need his closure. Because I had already built my own. And when he walked away for the final time, I didn't feel pain. I felt release. Because a manipulator's greatest fear is a version of you that no longer seeks their validation.